of the best loved characters in children's stories is Winnie the Pooh. In one escapade of this down-to-earth, lovable bear, the creation of the writer A.A. Milne, Pooh attempts to trap an elephant, or, as he mispronounces it, a heffalump. Pooh digs a hole to catch the heffalump and decides to bait the trap with some of his favourite food, honey. But, fond as he is of honey, he can't bear to leave a whole jar of it in the trap, and so begins to eat some himself, excusing himself with the thought that it's important to make sure it really is honey all the way down. It wouldn't do to have everything else, would it? Perhaps cheese or something at the bottom. And of course, by the time he's quite sure it really was honey all the way down, the jar was empty. For Pooh, what matters is what the jar really contains, all the way down. If it's only got honey on the top, but something quite different underneath, one needs to know. And that lies at the heart of what Jesus now says, by way of comment on the early discussion about the purity laws. We'll just have a look at this passage just before we get to today's. We need to just see what happened previously with Jesus' clash with the Pharisees. Now, they were complaining to Jesus that his disciples hadn't washed their hands. They said, they must wash your hands. They're not honouring their father and their mother. And Jesus is quite rude back to them, and he says, "You hypocrites! Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you. These people honour me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are but rules taught by men." Now, these Pharisees, they were complaining about Jesus' disciples not showing the correct, rigorous application to the purity laws. They wanted to live by the biblical ideal that Israel was a priestly kingdom and a holy nation. So they tried to enforce some of Israel's priestly laws into daily life, so that home and table would express in a small way the holiness of the temple. The priestly duty of hand washing before temple service was one of these laws. It was a law made by the elders, not by God, and had been handed down from one generation to another. Hence the question to Jesus was, "Why don't your disciples wash their hands before eating?" The issue at stake between Jesus and the Pharisees was not just that he and his followers were doing things a new way instead of the traditional way, but at Jesus' sharp response that it wasn't that easy. Jesus doesn't answer the accusation, but in the chapter that we are looking at, he says things which undermine its force. What's the point of keeping all the purity laws? In order to be the sort of person God always had in mind? What sort of person did God always have in mind? One who was pure, not just on the surface, but all the way down to the very depths of their personality. Now, there wasn't anything wrong with the purity laws themselves, though some of the developed traditions about them may have been fairly pointless. But to stick just with the outward laws and ignore the call to be pure through and through was to miss the point entirely. Despairing of the Jewish leaders, Jesus tells the crowd that we are defiled by what we say, not by eating with unwashed hands. This upset the Pharisees and disturbs the disciples, who question Jesus. The disciples do not understand, so Jesus spells it out. It isn't what goes into the mouth, but what comes out of the mouth that makes you unclean. What on earth can he mean? He surely can't be thinking of vomit or spit. He is thinking of words. We are defiled by the thoughts and attitudes of our hearts, as shown in our words and actions. As long as we put external traditions before the reality of who we are and what we do, we are doomed. His point is that words reveal what the person contains deep down. That's really scary. The actions which make someone unclean, unfit for God's holy presence, are things like murder, adultery, fornication, and the rest. The motivations which point towards such action give themselves away in thoughts and words which come bubbling up from the depths of our personalities, our hearts. Whatever outward codes of conduct we may try to keep, it's the innermost self of that person that needs to be changed. If we are to be what God intended and wants for us, if we try to kid ourselves that we can live only by rules and regulations, a sort of personality checklist, then we have not understood or seen the depths of wickedness that lurks inside every one of us. Most of us are quite capable of most of the things listed in verse 19, and many more besides. If that's what's in our hearts, we are impure in God's eyes and need to be made clean into every cell of our bodies, like a spiritual spring clean. Today's reading is full of challenges. It is impossible to have a religious faith that is free from tradition. But tradition must serve faith. Faith must not be the slave to tradition. Christians are members of a community called to faith, holiness, and service. In every generation, we are called to discover what strengthens the life of this community and what weakens its weakness and service. The attitudes and commitments of our hearts are shown in the way we speak and act, and they betray who we really are. You know, my friends, Jesus is not the hazy, pastel-coloured figure of the Victorian Sunday school room. I'm sure you've all seen those pictures. I remember at Sunday school, pictures of Jesus looking all sort of holy and lovely and ethereal with children all around him and cherubs in the sky. He is far from meek and mild. Is our understanding and experience of the person of Jesus grown up enough to cope with the changes and chances of today's world? Today's gospel challenges a too comfortable picture of Jesus. He's robust. He can be brusque. He certainly has attitude. This should not surprise us, as an inoffensive pushover would not have been crucified. If we are to follow Jesus in the way of the cross, we need to be realistic about him in whose steps we tread. We may get the feeling sometimes that rules are coming increasingly to dominate our lives, regulating areas of life which have always been left open. Health and safety. Got to do this, you got to do that, you got to tick that box, you got to do that box. We all know that. But perhaps the rules which exert the most powerful hold upon us are those which are internal rather than external. Rules can have both a positive and a negative aspect. They can tell us what we should or should not do, what is or is not acceptable behaviour. On the other hand, our internal rules can dominate and restrict our whole attitude to life. They may have been laid down long ago for very good reasons at their time, but that time is now past, but the rules still exist. They exercise their influence upon us and restrict our ability to choose for ourselves. They can make us unwilling to change or to sanction change. The real challenge of this passage then comes to all of us, especially if we think of ourselves as followers of Jesus. We may not observe the purity laws of ancient Egypt, Israel, but are our hearts, our thoughts, our actions and intentions, and the casual words we utter, telling us that our own purity is less than satisfactory? I'll just say that again. We may not observe the purity laws of ancient Israel, but are our hearts, our thoughts, our actions and intentions, and the casual words we utter, telling us that our own purity is less than satisfactory? If so, what are we doing about it? What is extracted from the body is gone and forgotten, but what comes out of the mouth can linger and fester for a long time, even years after they've been spoken. An untruth, slander, gossip, unkind words, they can cause bitterness and rejection to the person or persons to whom they are spoken to. This leads to unforgiveness, illness, depression, and sometimes suicide. We have to be so careful what comes out of here. My friends, if we try to kid ourselves and others about our faith and heart, God sees through it. We can't kid God. We will all eventually have to stand before him and give an account of ourselves. Jesus does not in this passage offer us a remedy for the condition he has diagnosed. Ultimately, he himself is the remedy. As in his death and resurrection and the gift of the Spirit, he deals with the wickedness and uncleanness that infects the human race. But the remedy needs to be applied to the disease, down and down inside our human personality, so that when we stand before God, he will see us as he always intended, pure through and through, right down to the bottom. Ask God to help you and me recognize true purity of heart in the folk around us, to break in upon us his wisdom and purpose, and to open our hearts and change our lives. So there we are. Can we do it? Of course we can, but only in his strength and his love. Amen.